Williams pioneered many firsts in the pipeline construction business, like the backhoe was a first for the company.
That was before my time, but yes, that is true. That was in my uncle's day.
Used to dig trenches.
Right.
Various rotary machines come from.
Ditching machines, yeah.
Various rotary machines used to clean and coat pipelines.
That too, yeah. The coating machine.
And the superchargers, allowing engines to work at higher altitudes, mm-hmm. all came from your uncles.
Yeah, that came from a pipeline job they did down in Bolivia, where you had to have superchargers because they were working up at 14, 15,000 foot elevation.
You, Charlie, and David started the company with $25,000 in cash, $3.2 million in a note.
$3 million, exactly.
Okay, and at the end of 78, the company's assets totaled about $2 billion. Will that be accurate?
No. End of 78. I don't really know what it did then, end of 78. Today, the market value of the company is $24 billion. 600 million shares, and it's $12 billion.
And then you retired in what year?
The end of 78.
Interesting, you know, when you were laying all this pipeline, you never knew what you were doing, but then during the mid-80s, the company adds communication mm-hmm. to its business plan and places fiber optic cables inside old pipelines.
Yep.
That was Wiltel. You never know when you're preparing for the future, do you?
That's right. But of course, I retired long before that.
Right. In Tulsa, your company and you had such a major impact. I would like to visit a little bit about this urban renewal project in Tulsa. Covered about 9 blocks, I think, Cincinnati to Cheyenne, 1st to 3rd Street. Then we come to the 52-story Williams Tower.
Yeah, I've told that story before, but I'll tell it again. We were in what in those days was the NBT building, which now it's a 320 building, I think they call it, between 3rd and 4th Street. It's the old National Bank of Tulsa, which is now BOK. I think it'd be better if we did another thing first. Mm-hmm. In 1967, we had the chance to acquire 21% of the NBT stock. Mr. Chapman had passed away, and he used to own 21% of it, and it came on the market. And we did acquire it. So in 1967, we became 21% owner of NBT. And we were in the NBT building. And we had offices across the street in the Kennedy building and several other buildings in town, and we were really running out of space. We knew that we probably should do something about getting a central space. There was one group that thought we ought to move down to Houston, but we were reluctant to do that. We looked at the idea, but we liked Tulsa and still like it. My friend Murray McCune, who was an architect here, he had been taking advantage of a government activity called urban renewal, where you could borrow money very cheaply and almost condemn downtown property as long as you were going to do something to create jobs and activity downtown. And thinking about the 9 square blocks, which are from Cincinnati to Boulder and from 3rd down to across the railroad tracks, Murray had acquired about half of those 9 blocks, and he was going to put sort of a master warehouse center where you'd come in with the railroad and bring stuff and store it and break it up into lots and distribute it retail, wholesale activity right downtown there in this 9 block area. He was telling me about it, and he'd acquired it very cheaply. Being next door, I got thinking. After a lot of conversation, I talked him into selling us what he had acquired. Then we went on and got, with urban renewal, we got another third of the land. And I think the last pieces we had to pay for it. But we acquired and did, in fact, develop the 9 square blocks. Then we got talking about what to build there. Our original plan was to build 2 buildings, one on each side of Boston Avenue, about 2nd, where this present building is located, but let Boston Avenue continue through there. And we hired Minuto Yamasaki as our architect. As you know, he was the one that did the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our building eventually finally wound up looking like a miniature World Trade Center. He was going along with this idea of the two buildings. And like all architects, they prepare a model, have really something you can put on the table and look at and move things around. And we were talking about a hotel and other buildings. That's when I got to looking there with these two buildings with Boston Avenue run through there. I said, why do we want two buildings? I picked up one of the buildings and put it in the middle of Boston Avenue and put the other one on top of it. Yama's eyes lit up and he said, well, Mr. Williams, if you put those together, you get the same number of usable square feet with 52 stories. And I say, that's even better. That's when I called up Bobby LaFortune, who was mayor, and I knew well and told him I had an idea I needed to meet with him about. I went over to visit with him in his office, and after a little chit-chat, I said, I have an idea, Bob. I would like to close Boston Avenue. And of course, his eyes opened up. What do you mean? But I showed him, and to his credit, he thought it was a great idea, and it could be done. The interesting thing is we investigated, and Boston Avenue had really nothing underground. Main Street is full of sewers, power lines, water lines, gas lines, telephone lines, everything. But we were able to dig an 80-foot deep hole under our present building for all the underground stuff, and there was not a darn thing to stop us from doing it.
The mayor could say, yes, you can block Boston, but then he obviously had to go to city planners or commissioners.
Oh, sure. Oh yeah, they had to ratify.
Was there opposition to this?
No, none at all. And there shouldn't have been. There was really no reason for it because that part of downtown was a slum. Downtown was really dying. It gave it such a shot in the arm to have this whole development come there and bring that part of downtown back to life. I have an anecdote on that. In this whole transaction, we wound up owning the depot. You probably never came to Tulsa in a railroad.
Not in a railroad, no.
Back in the 40s, passenger trains were coming into Tulsa. But anyway, we acquired the depot and we were going to tear it down. But we found that the walls were 18 inches thick and reinforced concrete. Just a mess. Very, very difficult to tear it down and keep the railroad open and all that. So we decided instead to rehabilitate it and make it into usable office space. When we got on that kick, I had a call from the chief of police. I think his name was Purdy.
Yes, Chief Purdy.
I happened to know him pretty well. He said, you so-and-so, that he used a little stronger language. You're causing me just one hell of a problem. You got to help me. I said, what in the world's a problem? He said, I got to talk to you. I said, well, come on over and tell me what's on your mind. Finally, he said, damn you. He said, you have turned 29 derelicts loose on me here in town. I don't know what the hell to do with them. They've been living in your depot there. And he was right. That place stank to high heaven. We had to evict them. And now look what's happened to it. It's now the Jazz Hall of Fame. Yeah. I never imagined it would go into that.
So the tallest building then in Oklahoma at that time, 52-story Williams Tower. Was it all occupied when you moved in?
Yep.
You really needed 52 stories.
NBT, which became the Bank of Oklahoma, took 25% of the building, and we took the 75%.
And then, of course, you built the Forum.
We built the Forum, and then we built the two black buildings and the hotel. And then we raised the private money to build the Performing Arts Center.
Yep, and that's a story in itself, and I want to come to that a minute here. But the Forum was an ice rink and the shops and restaurants around it. It was a gift to Tulsa is what it was. It really was a beautiful place.
It was, and the hotel, you know, we started out owning the hotel. But now it's Crown Plaza, I believe.
It's changed hands many times, hasn't it, down the years.
Yeah.